Welcome to Plastics Unwrapped, a series supported by Dow, the materials science company. I'm your host, Maithri Seetharaman. In this podcast, we're on the hunt for solutions to some of the toughest challenges facing the plastics industry. I'll be joined by my producer, Lisa Desai.
Hey, everyone.
She's the woman with all the facts and figures we're going to be talking about. We're going to try and have some seriously honest conversations with guests from across sectors and from across the world. So let's together figure out what it'll really take to save the future of our planet. I like to say the old playbooks perhaps need to become workbooks and new chapters written. The world is finally paying attention to what biodiversity loss means for our planet. And why not? Because consumers and investors are demanding more sustainable practices. And it feels like the corporate world is recognizing that the health of ecosystems directly impacts long-term business success and resilience. You know what? 50% of the global economy is at risk right now.
It's not just the corporate world that's waking up, Maithri, it's also government. So in 2024, at the COP of biodiversity, 119 countries submitted biodiversity targets, and 44 of those countries submitted actual strategies. So all of this action is happening against the backdrop of almost a million species at risk of extinction.
You know what? We're not the only people worried, because consumers, even in this cost of living crisis that's going on globally, are willing to pay nearly 10% more for sustainably sourced goods. So it's understandable that companies then start saying, hang on, this makes business sense, and will adopt a more science-based approach to the world around us. And that really helps us understand how companies like 3M are involving biodiversity and their science teams in creating products that matter. So let's welcome to the show 3M's chief science advocate, Jayashree Seth. Jayashree, it's great to have you on the show. I wanted to kick off our conversation with a really simple question. How do you look at your role as scientists compared to the communities that you serve? And then how does that really come back and redefine the kind of research and development work you guys do at 3M?
Well, thank you for having me. And that's a great question to start with, because science and scientists and the work we do is not in a vacuum. So the role of the communities that we serve is very important. And at 3M, it is especially important given our framework. And science for community is a pillar in our sustainability framework. And that pillar reminds us of the role we play and how we can drive not just innovation, but also create a robust next generation in STEM. So I think the role of the scientist is not just the corporate philosophy, but also the personal philosophy that people carry. And there is more recognition now that it is motivating for people. So we have created even a purpose in our corporation that is unlock the power of people, ideas, and science to reimagine what is possible. So we can clearly tap into the agency that people feel to serve the communities that they're operating under. And for me personally, I still choose to sort of describe sustainability as how I explained the essence of this term to my kids when they were in elementary school. If I may share, I told them it is about paying attention to yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And you have to learn from what happened yesterday and make the right choices. But that is exactly the way it manifests itself at work for me and many of my coworkers as scientists in the lab working on, you know, technology and product development. So we like to constantly challenge ourselves. And I often say to my teams, the most sustainable product ever made is the product never made.
There you go. You have products that do good if you're thinking of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. I love that. So YTT, as I'm going to call it, really seems to have defined your career and your drive and this unique role that's been created for you of chief science advocate. When you're looking at making science for the people and you're thinking about the product development phase, do you think of end of life as scientists first, or are you looking at that product first?
It's all of the above, right? Especially given our sustainability value commitment. So let me explain that. Sustainability value commitment is 3M's corporate framework. It's part of that. It's a formal requirement that every product drives impact for the greater good. And our overall framework is science for circular, science for climate, science for community. So science for circular is about designing solutions that do more with less material so we can advance a global circular economy. Science for climate is innovation to decarbonize industry, accelerate global climate solutions, and improve our environmental footprint. And science for community is about creating a more positive world through science and inspiring people to join us.
But what about products that 3M has across the globe? I mean, you guys have products probably touching, a central part or a remote part of the Amazon, for example. There's some things that are still plastic or will have to be plastic. How are you innovating in that space? And what is some of the innovations you're kind of excited about in the lab at this point?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, sustainability value commitment. So what does that do functionally for us, right? It can manifest itself in different ways. So how are we reducing the footprint of our products by, let's say, improving our own operations? So water, energy, raw material usage, et cetera. So we analyze the impact of our products so we can understand product carbon footprint and use that data to evaluate opportunities within our operations, within our supply chain, where we might make different choices to reduce impact of raw material, use less energy or water, reduce transportation. And then another example from consumer that I also like, and it specifically relates to question about plastics. It's the first curbside recyclable mailer material that businesses can use to automate their packaging process. This is called padded automatable curbside recyclable packer mailer material. It is made with a single layer of craft paper. It's lightweight, it's durable, it resists moisture penetration, and it's got a proprietary padding technology that not only protects it from drops or bursts or vibration, but also other potential risks during shipping. So basically, 3M is innovating packaging solutions by replacing plastics or using less fossil-based plastic or increasing the use of recycled or bio-based plastic where possible. And we prioritize the protection of the products, the efficient packaging, and a circular design. And this all is under our corporate initiative to reduce virgin fossil plastic. We are amongst the first in over 200 global businesses, financial institutions, and NGOs to endorse the Business Coalition for a Global Plastics Treaty. So to answer your question, it's really a multi-pronged approach, and every step makes a difference. And with every step, we learn, and that learning can then be used for the next learning. So I think it's just working under these frameworks and giving it a real good 360 view, if you will.
YTT again, right? I mean, I love it when you tell me this, because the idea then means is you're looking at each product line that you have and saying, what impact are we having on our environmental surroundings? And that would literally be including humans as well. So what kind of data points are you using when you're analyzing the current portfolio of products and saying, this is where we need to innovate some more, this works just fine? Is there a methodology to the madness of innovation?
There always is, but it may seem messy and it may seem a little bit chaotic. But each product platform, each technology platform has a strong emphasis from the sustainability framework. And having the constraint of the sustainability value proposition is actually very freeing, because it gives you a focal point to work on. And so people may view it as a constraint. We see it as the possibilities and the opportunity it gives us. So it is a lens to view every single product, every single technology platform, and every future technology building block. And so we really have embedded it at the core from a corporate perspective, as well as from a grassroots level through our culture of empowerment and 15% culture and the diverse perspectives that we bring in.
I mean, you mentioned diverse perspectives, both in communities and in your teams. Talk to us a little bit about how that kind of knowledge impacts the kind of R&D that happens and how your teams view the solutions that they're trying to build and how they look like in reality.
Yeah, I think diversity is really what fuels innovation. I like to say our world requires innovation. So if I understand your question right, my answer is we are active across what I call the ecosystem. And I call it the ecosystem because they all start with E. You know, it's the exposure, the engagement, the empowerment, the education, the economics, the empathy across the spectrum from early childhood to employment. And we understand that environments that lack diversity can become closed echo chambers, and the same voices will continue to reflect and reverberate. And what happens as a result is that the problem sets are identified with that very narrow point of view. And that hurts science and it hurts innovation. It makes the whole problem to solve a little more vulnerable. So we are very active in making sure we're bringing in diverse perspective, global perspective.
One of the questions I had top of mind was, considering how ginormous the company is and the kind of impact you have globally, in terms of indigenous knowledge in many, many countries and how they use certain products, does that influence the R&D teams that are working on these very, very scientific solutions?
Yeah, I think the way this works is we have a number of events throughout the year that are about bringing the outside in. And they are done under the auspices of some of the corporate sustainability initiatives and also through what is called 3M Technical Forum. So 3M Technical Forum is an organization run by the technical people for the technical people. And we have chapters in there that are devoted to understanding what does the sustainability landscape look like externally and bringing those voices in to give presentations. And we all show up and listen to understand how we can incorporate anything and everything that was discussed with what we're doing. So the answer to your question is becoming an expert in what you do functionally and in your experiments that you do in the lab is great. But if it doesn't have the context, then it may just be so siloed that it really doesn't even relate to the relevance that it has for the current marketplace, for the communities that we all belong to as well. So we constantly have a focus on learning. And so one of the things that we are doing is partnering with the Earthworm Foundation. And this supports the TKD First Nation in British Columbia, Indigenous protected and conserved area in Canada. And the idea is to protect high conservation value forests in their territory. You know, these are some of the world's last remaining intact forests, and they serve as a source of sustenance and culture and history for the TKD, as well as critical species habitat and carbon storage. So the whole idea is everybody coming together to understand what is going on, what happened yesterday, what is happening today, and what can we do for tomorrow. And that is not just a corporate philosophy, but also something that each one of us as individuals can bring with us.
That is fascinating because it's so important. And we were talking to Anna Rathman at the Jane Goodall Institute earlier, and she was talking about how it was so important for us to really listen to each other, no matter which side of the environmental and climate argument you're coming from. And she said she would love a seat at the table with everyone, every single stakeholder, whether it's businesses like yours or governments. How do we bring scientists to the table along with the conservationists, the policymakers, the business heads to talk about YTT for the current issues we're all facing?
What she said is spot on. You know, to advance sustainability, as you say, we need participation from all stakeholders, private companies, government, investors, nonprofits, and community members. And it's only by collaborating on solutions and each one leveraging the strengths they bring after learning what is the collective goal and agreeing upon that, right? So we can leverage our technology platform, our manufacturing capabilities, and bringing partners along with us, we can achieve our goals faster and encourage others to join on this journey. So the best way is to support or organize convenings like she is looking for, and acknowledge this role that each one plays, including scientists. And let's just say the last few years have shown us the importance of not just doing science, but also interacting with the community and science communication. I mean, science was in the public discourse and scientists were center stage during the pandemic.
So give me an idea, just a wild guess, because we know technology is moving faster than the speed of light. Science is also speeding up. Give me an idea of what you think the plastic usage of 3M will look like in another 30 years. Do you think you'll use plastic in its current form, or would you have innovated a whole new material? Because plastic is a very young material anyways.
I would say anything is possible. Anything is possible. We've already got corporate goals, right, to reduce virgin fossil-based plastic by, I think it's 69.8 million pounds, and advancing towards our goal of 125 million pounds by the end of 2025. And certainly working towards those things gives people the ability to innovate and think about many more creative ways they can change the paradigm. So I would say definitely I see that there are a lot of changes that can happen. And there is a very strong desire technically to accelerate alternatives.
If you could make change happen faster, let's not wait 30 years, what would you like to see?
From my vantage point, I see that many in technical community, you know, across companies, just not mine, they're very excited to solve for climate challenges. And we firmly believe that we can find creative solutions to many of the problems. But the efforts may be relegated to becoming mere science projects if sustainability, allyship, and advocacy is not actively fostered across the value chain. Without these partnerships and commitments, any truly groundbreaking innovative concept, anything that can have a substantial impact on sustainability, will likely struggle to see the light of the day. So from my personal perspective, you know, the old models of leadership and the frameworks for business may need to change to drive that pace of sustainable innovation. I like to say the old playbooks perhaps need to become workbooks and new chapters written. What is important is leadership and legacy in organizations, allyship and advocacy across the value chain, partnership and primacy with the public, and stewardship and diplomacy.
And as long as all of us have yesterday, today, and tomorrow on our minds, we can get there. Jayashree, thank you so very much for joining us on the show.
Thank you so much, Maitri, for the opportunity to share perspective.
3M isn't the only one talking about biodiversity and science. Dow, our sponsor, is too. Here to explain a little bit more about how serious Dow is about putting biodiversity at the core of its strategy is Gary Hauptmann, Global Sustainability Director for Climate and Circularity. Gary, it's great to have you on the show. Talk to us about how the journey towards viewing nature, communities, the ecosystem is changing in the mindset of a company as ginormous as Dow.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here today. I would say our journey really began probably about 30 years ago. That was the beginning of Dow's sustainability journey. We have just about to the end of our third set of 10-year goals in the sustainability space. And over that 30-year period have focused pretty significantly on water conservation. Just in the last 10 years or so, I think have really established the company as a leader in nature-based solutions and valuing nature. It was a very innovative goal we put out about 10 years ago. And what we really see now is a need to lean in a little farther, a little broader with our goals and move more meaningfully towards water stewardship in a little bit more holistic sense, but also a little bit of a different lean on biodiversity so that we're a constructive part in slowing biodiversity loss and eventually reversing it.
So what are these goals that you're setting for yourself?
Yeah, so they're kind of a two-part set of goals. One is on water resilience, and that's a little different than you see from a lot of companies right now who have enterprise targets about water intensity or water reduction. We're focused on water resilience, and we're focused on water resilience in 20 key watersheds where we have our most significant dependence on water from an operational perspective, but they're also our water stress sites. We have an increase in water stress in our asset base. And so from a business continuity perspective, water stewardship, water conservation is critically important for our growth objectives and for safe operation at the sites. On the conservation side, we put out ahead of us a new benchmark to partner to conserve 50,000 acres of habitat by 2050. And we believe that that really changes the way the company thinks over time about strategic and conservation-minded management of the land assets that we hold, and also pushes us to really work with our communities in order to find great conservation opportunities that increase access to nature for the communities around our sites.
That's a big mindset shift, hasn't it been, for incumbent industries like yours? And there hasn't been a great track record in the past of putting communities or nature first. Why should people believe these targets, not just of companies like Dow?
Yeah, I think you raise a fair concern. And so let me just offer a couple thoughts. I think first and foremost, I would say Dow has a long track record, obviously in the material innovation space, the chemistry innovation space. But we also lead the industry and frankly lead the manufacturing sector in safety practices. And we've got that 30-year track record of sustainability goals. And that's the longest path, frankly, of almost any manufacturer out there as well. But I would say like individuals, like people, like I have over the last 20 or 30 years, we grow, we evolve, we change. Frankly, we mature over time. We get better at what we do. I think it's also fair for all of us to recognize that we're on a real steep learning path when it comes to environment, when it comes to conservation, when it comes to biodiversity. The goals that we set 10 years ago, we've reflected now that they need to be broader, they need to be deeper, they need to be different. So I think as we're trying to set our targets today to put the company on a different path or in a kind of an accelerated path over the next two decades or so, we're trying to make that a combination of what we have learned, what we know today. And frankly, we're shaking the crystal ball a bit to try and figure out what that looks like in the future. And that future casting is tough, but we know it's absolutely necessary. And we are taking our best and making our best effort to put these goals forward that we feel are meaningful and that really push the company to think differently, to think better, to think bigger about the opportunities in water stewardship more broadly than conservation, and also the habitat and natural conservation space. Our progress has been out there in voluntary reports for 20 years. We're going to continue to do that. We picked up TNFD as a way to guide how we're talking about water and nature going forward. And I hope that our stakeholders out there are holding us accountable to what we say we want to do, what we say is necessary for the company to do, and what we want to do in terms of meaningful change for our community. So we're excited with the new strategy. We think it reflects a great kind of a turn of the page and a next evolution or even revolution on our water and nature ambition. And we're excited to, frankly, to partner with anyone who wants to come with us.
That's really interesting because we were speaking to Jayashree Seth earlier, who was kind of alluding to the same thing. She called it YTT, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And it looks like corporates are really grappling with how to actually think about tomorrow. So if you're going in with communities that are kind of gauging you cautiously, how do you win those communities over?
I think the winning over of a community happens each and every day through the voices and the actions of every employee we have in that community. So I don't think there's a moment at which you win a community over or you convince a community that you are in it with them and that you are sharing that same environment, you're sharing that same ecosystem with them. We have a long history of, I think, really solid community collaboration, especially in our legacy, longstanding communities. You know, over time, we move in and out of sites occasionally when we have a merger or a divestiture, that kind of thing. But for the most part, the sites that are part of the Dow family have been part of the Dow family for a very long time. And those communities are where our employees live and play. They're where we volunteer. They're where we worship. They're where we are. And so I think we have, as a company, taken it as incumbent on each individual here to engage with the community in our own ways and to make sure that we are a positive influence and we're a positive action and agent for change in those communities and that we're not here today and gone tomorrow, that these are where we put down roots. And we do that worldwide and it looks different in some places. We have a really remarkable site in the Amazon that's part of our silicone supply chain. And we hold tens of thousands of acres of native Amazon forest there as part of the Brazil legislation about conservation in the Amazonas. And as part of that land holding and that operation, we recognize that we have some indigenous communities who rely on the land and rely on the forest for subsistence living and for valuable livelihood. And so we engage with them very meaningfully about how DAO's land can help them in their economic development and in their social development. So, for example, one of the communities along our Amazon forest, we work with them with a local nonprofit to help them harvest an anaeroba seed. And an anaeroba seed is used in bath and body care products as an emollient. It makes your skin nice and soft as part of a moisturizing formulation. And they sell it with the help of this NGO. They've created a business model to sell that seed, provides skill growth for them, provides economic development for the community, provides us an opportunity to work with them in a meaningful way, to help meet their needs, but also to have a great partnership with them as a neighbor of a DAO site and as an important group in our community. They just recently moved into the honeybee cultivation. They see a great opportunity for the Brazilian honeybees and the very rich and sweet honey that comes out of the honeybees that are there in our forest. And so they've taken a tiny part of the forest and they harvest honey and take it to market. And that provides, again, another source of revenue stream and development for that community. So there are lots of ways that the DAO family engages with our communities. Those are just a couple of examples, and they look different depending on where we are and depending on what the need is in the community around us.
We can talk about science-based solutions and nature-based solutions, but in a leadership team, how much of that plays a part in mid to long-term decision-making versus the policies that are going to come at you guys or the policy shifts that will happen? And how does that really influence the decision-making? Because these things are not short-term investments. These are long-term investments that you're making, not just into your plants, but into your workforce, into the communities that your workforce live in, as you have rightly pointed out.
There are a couple of ways that we approach that. One is more of a formal governance type of a structure. And, you know, that we put all of that in our disclosure reports. But it basically says that these key sustainability challenges and key sustainability opportunities that the company sees, whether it's circular economy or a path to zero carbon or water or biodiversity, those are all overseen by a delegated team of our top executives, by our CEO. And they keep very close watch and are very constructive and are very meaningful in the decision-making process as we're thinking about, for example, trade-offs between carbon and water or low-carbon energy and land use and those kinds of questions. There are a series of governance teams. And in fact, our water and biodiversity strategy just recently went to the DAO Board of Directors for a vetting and final approval. So there's the formal side of that governance. Then there's, I think, I would say the informal side of it, which is in some cases one of the most significant challenges, because what we're talking about with a new water and nature strategy is a deep change management opportunity that has to happen across the entire organization in order for us to really be effective at driving water resilience in 20 big watersheds or driving a change in the way we think about land for conservation purposes. So there's the formal side, and then there's also kind of that softer, I would say harder, more difficult side, which is the change management piece that moves the organization to a scarcity mindset, meaning water is not finite, neither is land. Biodiversity loss is real, and it's important to address in a meaningful, actionable way in the near term rather than to wait and see what happens. So when you try and move an organization of some 35,000 individuals to a scarcity mindset, just because you can doesn't mean we should in terms of water use. Just because we might have a water plenty site doesn't mean we should use all that water. And so it's a change management moment for us to really create leaders throughout the organization when it comes to water stewardship and land conservation.
So it kind of seems to echo the conversations I've had with many of your colleagues about your circularity model. And then you look at, you know, trying to figure out from source to end of life kind of thinking mindset change that you're all trying to implement in different parts of the business. So when you look at projects that you're getting involved in, and talking about partnerships as you have with different stakeholders, are you going all the way back to source? Are we looking at, you know, trying to solve the river issue or the ocean issue, or are we just kind of restricting ourselves to the manufacturing sites only?
Our new strategy really reflects the need to think about water and nature from tip to toe. So from the top of our supply chain, whether that's a bio-based raw material for a new polymer, or it's a catalyst of some kind, think about where risks and dependencies and good opportunities for partnerships are to reduce those in our supply chain. We already talked about a focus on world-class water stewardship at the sites and land management of Dow's assets. But then we also think about this in terms of the product side, the product innovation that's going to be necessary in order to enable society to get to a net carbon zero future that enables us to maintain and improve watershed health or ecosystem health or human health. That innovation part of the opportunity is critically important. And so at all points in that process, those 3 points in the process, we are thinking about. But underpinning all of that is this collaboration piece, which we've been talking a little bit about. And I just thought maybe I'd give you the quick example of where we're thinking about collaboration a little bit different way. Dow is a founding member of a nonprofit called Rivers Are Life. And it is really a storytelling movement that raises awareness about the health of the world's rivers. They create beautiful documentaries of individuals who are, through force of will and passion of their own, bringing some really amazing solutions to the world's rivers that help with that circular economy piece. And so a couple of examples. One is an example on the Mississippi River here in the United States. It's called Study Aboard. And it's a group called Living Lands and Waters. They go up and down the Mississippi River, removing debris from the environment. Whether it's on the banks or floating in the river itself, they're removing debris from the environment. They have figured out a way to separate and sort what they remove from the environment, whether it's metal or glass or plastic, whether it's easy to recycle plastic or not so easy to recycle plastic. And then they take that hard to recycle material, the plastic material, and they turn it into shipping pallets. It's a woman-owned operation, woman-run operation. And so they have created in the Mississippi watershed a truly circular economy for the debris that they're finding in the river. The Rivers Are Life has a project on the Nile that talks about the plastic cleanup, where this group pays above market wages for individuals to clean and remove plastic from the Nile. An example in India, on the Mithi River, where they're cleaning debris out of the river, and they're looking at rivers as really kind of the bellwether. Beaches and rivers as the bellwether of how healthy our infrastructure is to be able to manage consumerism and how we're moving materials through supply chain. So just a couple of examples of how Dow has thought about collaboration a little bit differently. We're not directly involved with these nonprofits, except where we can provide additional resources that helps them scale their activities. But Rivers Are Life is such a terrific way to tell the story of these small organizations that are making huge impact in the world's rivers.
Storytelling is always important when you're trying to get a message across. But what is also sometimes important is what the strategy is on the supply chain itself. So is Dow going to look at its efforts towards its supply chain and trying to put down some regulations or internal rules and regs that your suppliers have to follow or your customers have to follow? And is that going to be part of your scope 3 targets at all? Or are we going to leave this as voluntary?
No, in fact, we already have. Dow has had supplier code of conduct, for example, for a couple of decades now, where we, as part of our agreement with a supplier, require certain processes, certain practices of our suppliers, whether it's on reporting carbon emissions or it's on water stewardship or it's now on deforestation and wetland loss. So we've actually moved very quickly in the deforestation and wetland loss space and put that as part of the supplier code of conduct. Likewise, we do that with customers. We have always endeavored to make sure that our customers know as much about our products as we do, that we've established our expectations about safe use, safe applications of products. We do a very robust risk assessment. Anytime a product is being considered for a new application or a new market, we think very seriously about all of the environmental and health and kind of circular aspects of those new product uses to make sure that the science we have today is being put to the best possible use in order to make sure that we're not having an undue impact on these natural ecosystems.
It brings up an interesting question for industries across the world, and I just want to get your take on this when it comes to how we're looking at biodiversity. Law doesn't change as quickly, but human mindset and science tells us that communities are going to be quicker and faster and have higher expectations from big companies across the globe.
As we think about the evolution in the company over the last few decades, moving from a compliance mindset to a really a beyond compliance opportunity space where we're looking for ways to look around the next corner and ways to be responsive ahead of the curve to what consumers, what customers, and what other stakeholders and shareholders are asking of us. We have moved that beyond compliance sort of mindset throughout the company. But I think what is also inherent in that constant pursuit of opportunity is to make sure that we remain grounded in the science, grounded in best practices, and grounded in the ethical claims that we make about the products that we're putting on the market. So, for example, what we don't want to do is say a product is going to reduce your water use by some enormous percent. Meanwhile, it's actually harder on the environment. We want to avoid situations like that where there is a greenwashing kind of an intimation or where there's a sense that do we have the whole story and the whole picture of that product or of that new opportunity. So the organization really remains grounded in risk assessment, in the product innovation space, in the best models that we can use, and frankly, the best manufacturing technology that we can bring to bear so that every claim, every brand opportunity that we have to look for an opportunity in the market is really substantiated by best possible science, best possible data, and that we avoid any kind of connotation or any kind of intimation that maybe we've overstated the product benefit or that we've drifted a bit into the greenwash space.
What is the biggest challenge ahead for a company like Dow when you look at a new way of operating in this world and putting that biodiversity hat on and saying every decision I'm going to take going forward is going to look at the impact of the world around us? What is the big challenge?
I would say the big challenge, and I think the best opportunity for Dow, is to really put systems thinking into play in a real world way. And by systems thinking, I mean we no longer have the luxury or the opportunity to optimize for one particular sustainability outcome. We can't necessarily say we're going to be a fully circular economy, fully circular company, or fully circular product line without thinking about how that impacts carbon emissions, how that impacts water use, what that does to land use. So I think if we bring systems thinking back to the front, and I know that was a big thing, you know, several years ago, talking about systems thinking, but what we're seeing is that this intersection of carbon and water and land use or biodiversity is becoming more meaningful and more challenging with every decision a company takes. So if we consider clean energy as part of our solution, we need to be thinking about the land use associated with solar and wind. If we're thinking about low carbon technologies for our assets, that's Dow's decarbonize and grow strategy speaks to the need to physically decarbonize our assets. We're going to change the water balance and potentially the land use dynamics in these watersheds where we put these new technologies. If we're thinking about delivering fresh water to the world's growing population, increasingly the answer is starting to look like desalination. But desalination requires an enormous amount of energy. So there become these really interesting trade-offs and intersectional thinking, if you will, about where water and carbon and land use and biodiversity all we have to be thinking about them all together. Otherwise, what we end up doing is we upset the natural balance in our race to optimize one of those. But I'm excited because I really see it as one of the most inspiring and frankly exciting opportunities we've got on the horizon.
The sentiment changes off and on depending on regulations, as you and I know, and so does investor sentiment. There's been this pushback against ESG we've seen, not just in the United States, but it seems to be traversing the world. At a point at which you're adopting a biodiversity strategy, does that have an influence going forward if you see the financial markets just kind of go, they're not that interested anymore in climate, nature, and all the things that have been really important till now in the last couple of years? What does that do to your strategy?
I don't believe that this represents a significant change in Dow's strategy going forward. The company's sustainability ambition and the journey that we've been on predates any conversation about ESG in its current form. It has always been important to the company to engage communities, to be equitable in our practices, to focus on environmental stewardship, and to represent all of that work through good governance and regulatory compliance and transparency with our stakeholders. So what we understand and what I believe to be true is that Tao stays the course regardless of the distraction about whether we're calling this sustainability or ESG, or whether there are subsets of that group who are a bit disenchanted with the work. The work is important. The commitment that the company has to it will remain true, no matter what it's called out there. This is a continuation and a constant evolution of a path and a journey that Tao has been on for decades. And the current climate and the current conversation about it doesn't impact what we believe is the right thing to do for our communities, for society, for our employees going forward.
On that note, Carrie, thanks very much for joining us. You've got a big challenge ahead, and so does the company. We wish you luck. It's a mountain to climb, but I'm sure you'll do it.
Thanks for having us. It was good to be with you today.
Next time, we're going to get into a real-world chat about artificial intelligence. From tackling plastic waste to fighting climate change, researchers like Denise Hardesty from Australia's CSIRO are using AI to uncover insights we couldn't dream of 5 years ago. Don't miss it. Thanks for sticking with us to the end as we hunt for solutions to make plastics truly circular. This podcast is supported by Tao, one of the world's leading materials science companies. And don't forget to share the show if you enjoyed it. Do leave us a comment or a review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.